What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT, man, and I'm really hurt right now, dog. I'm so hurt right now because the Steelers just trade away my favorite player, man. They just trade away Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers. Oh, my goodness. Y'all don't know how hurt I am right now. Oh my goodness, bro. It's tough being a Steelers fan right now, dog. This team is just putting me through the ringer right now. Earlier, they had me happy as hell because we just signed Patrick Queen in free agency. You know, we've been making moves, but this was not the move that I wanted to see be made, man. I'm really hurt today. They traded Deontay. And then what has me even more upset is Steeler fans acting like it's no big deal. Like, listen, I get we draft good wide receivers, but let's not act like Deontay Johnson was some bums. Did he have butterfingers at times? Yes, he did. But he was one of the best route runners and one of the best peer separators in the National Football League, man. I'm really hurt right now that we traded away Deontay Johnson. And Dante Jackson, bro, he's not that good. I was looking at his PFF score. I was looking at his advanced analytics, and the Steelers didn't get anything, dog. We're going to talk about this Deontay Johnson trade. Welcome to another episode of the podcast, man. On this episode, we're going to be discussing Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins' potential impacts with their new teams. I'm going to be grading the day two NFL free agency signings, ranking my top 10 receivers in the upcoming 2024 NFL draft. The Jaden Daniels versus Drake May debate, I have my thoughts on it. I'm going to chime in on the argument. And before we begin, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. Every episode, including this one, is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. If you have a question that you would like answered on a future episode, you can send them in the DMs on Instagram at JT Sports _ and on X at JT Sports _. Leave us with a follow. Support the channel. Give us a 5-star review. Share the pod if you enjoy this episode. And before we get into it, here's a quick word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner Mint Mobile has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports and description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get premium wireless for only $15 a month. Stop getting upset with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and switch to Mint Mobile today. The Pittsburgh Steelers just traded away my favorite player today, man. You know, I was so happy when I saw the news that the Steelers signed linebacker Patrick Queen in free agency. I was jumping up and down with tears of joy rolling down my eyes. Just for me, a few hours later, to be having tears of sadness rolling down my eyes because we're trading away wide receiver Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers. Oh my God, this hurts. This hurts my soul, man. And listen, I get that the Steelers are a really good team when it comes to drafting and evaluating wide receivers, but let's not make it seem like losing Deontay Johnson is just some loss that the Steelers can easily scoff over. Yeah, he had butterfingers, but he's one of the best route runners and best peer separators in the National Football League. And for the Carolina Panthers, this trade is a huge steal for you. Now, you're giving the Steelers a 6th round pick and cornerback Dante Jackson. Now, Dante Jackson is a average, maybe slightly above average cornerback, in my opinion. Could he be a potential Pro Bowl caliber cornerback in Pittsburgh? Maybe, because Mike Tomlin does specialize on the defensive end of the football, and he does have a background specializing in defensive back play. So Dante Jackson should look like a stud with Mike Tomlin. But for the Carolina Panthers, you know, you're getting not just Deontay Johnson, but a 7th-round pick as well. And when you think about what Deontay Johnson brings to Carolina's offense, he's going to be a perfect fit for what Dave Canales wants to do schematically. What was the biggest issue that the Panthers' wide receiving core had last year? They couldn't separate. They couldn't get open. They weren't making it easy for Bryce Young to throw the football. Outside of Adam Thielen, they had nobody who was able to consistently get open. Deontay Johnson is going to solve that issue. Now, he may have a couple of big drops and big moments, but you'll live with that because he easily could be a dude who goes for 1,100, maybe 1,200 yards. And the reason why Pittsburgh traded him had nothing to do with him not being good. This dude is probably one of the most underrated wide receivers in the National Football League. The reason why he got traded is because, you know, he was a little disgruntled. There were a few games this year where Mike Tomlin had to talk to him on the sideline, give him one of those talks like, hey, man, what's going on? You know, calm down, get your head back in the game. And listen, I really feel like the character issues with Deontay Johnson were really overblown. I really blame this trade taking place because of Kenny Pickett. If Kenny Pickett wasn't so damn sorry, Deontay Johnson never would be as upset as what he was during this season. Bro, like, I couldn't blame Deontay Johnson and George Pickens being upset. The receivers, they want to make plays. They want to catch the football. And when you got garbage Kenny Pickett throwing you the football, you're not going to have a chance to make plays. So can you blame Deontay Johnson for being frustrated with what he was getting out of the quarterback position? Absolutely not. Like, I'm so upset that this trade took place, man. Y'all can call Deontay Johnson a quitter all you want to, but if we had better quarterback play, Deontay Johnson would have been as frustrated as what he was this past season. I ain't see Deontay Johnson looking disgruntled when Mason Rudolph was in that quarterback. Am I right or am I wrong? But Deontay Johnson and George Pickens were looking pretty happy when Mason Rudolph was throwing passes. But this is what happens when you have garbage quarterback play. When you have garbage quarterback play, receivers want to make plays, but they can't make plays because the QB can't get them the freaking football. This is what happens. They get upset. And eventually, Deontay Johnson, I guess he got to a point where he was like, you know what? If y'all want to trade me, trade me. And the Steelers, they did the right thing. You know what Mike Tomlin always says? We don't want hostages. We want volunteers or something like that. But for Bryce Young, I mean, you just got blessed, dog. Deontay Johnson, if you're looking for a sleeper wide receiver in fantasy football, everybody needs to be drafting Deontay Johnson. He should easily go for over 1,000 yards. He possibly could give you 1,100, 1,200 yard season. Dave Canales' offense is quarterback friendly. He wants to get the ball out fast. It's a rhythmatic offense. And for a dude like Deontay Johnson, that is a great separator, a really good route runner, he's going to thrive in this offense. And he's probably going to get more targets in his first season with Carolina than what he ever did with the Pittsburgh Steelers, bro. The quarterback play was so damn bad that he didn't even score no damn touchdown in 2022. So, I mean, Bryce Young being the former number one overall pick, this is what he needs to succeed. You see, everybody is already trying to write off Bryce Young, calling him a bust. It's unfair to call Bryce Young a bust, considering the situation that he was in last year. CJ Stroud wouldn't have looked any better than what Bryce Young did behind an awful offensive line and no wide receivers that could separate. Deontay Johnson is going to quickly become Bryce Young's best friend and his most reliable option. He'll have a few drops here or there, but outside of the drops, which he doesn't drop it that often, but he is known to drop big passes in crucial moments at times. But outside of that, man, Deontay Johnson is everything that you want in a receiver. Everything. He can get open. He doesn't really get caught up in man press coverage too often. I love this trade for the Carolina Panthers. Hate it for the Pittsburgh Steelers, man, because you aren't really getting anything. Dante Jackson, if you think that you can turn him into a Pro Bowl caliber corner, then do your thing, Mike Tomlin. But I don't really see a good cornerback in Dante Jackson. I see an average corner. And there's nothing wrong with having average cornerback play because, I mean, that's all the Steelers were getting last year outside of Joey Porter Jr. All the other cornerbacks that the Steelers had playing on the field in 2023 were average or worse. So Dante Jackson, I think that he fits in perfectly with what the Steelers have already had at cornerback. This isn't an upgrade. He isn't no different from the guys we had starting at cornerback last year. I really wanted us to draft a cornerback at 20 in this year's draft. I wanted Cooper DeJean out of Iowa or Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. Those two guys would be perfect fits in this offense. With Dante Jackson, average corner, maybe he gives you above average cornerback play at best. But I really don't like this trade for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we got to stop making it seem like every wide receiver that leaves Pittsburgh just disappears. Like, yeah, we lost Chase Claypool. He did nothing. But Antonio Brown, he left Pittsburgh and he won the Super Bowl. You know, Emmanuel Sanders left Pittsburgh and he had a lot of success in Denver and with San Francisco. So yeah, the Steelers may be one of the best teams in the NFL at drafting wide receivers. But this isn't just going to be a loss that the Steelers can just scoff over. It's really difficult to find receivers that create the amount of separation that Deontay Johnson has. This dude is a gifted route runner. You don't find route runners as talented as Deontay every day. They don't grow on trees. And for Bryce Young now, you're going to have a true number one option. I view Deontay Johnson and George Pickens both as number one wideouts. Now for Pittsburgh, you got another hole that you have to fill. What are you going to do to replace Deontay Johnson? And for all the people that keep saying, oh, he's not going to be that hard to replace. He dropped so many passes. Bruh, the dude only had like 3, 4, maybe 5 drops last year, man. He didn't even have that much of an opportunity to drop a lot of passes because nobody could get him the damn football. Well, Kenny Pickett couldn't get him the damn football. So, I mean, Deontay Johnson, regardless of what Steeler fans say about him, Carolina Panthers fans, you're getting a really good wide receiver. You just got to ignore the Steeler fans, man. Like, Steeler fans will tell you this dude would drop a few passes, but he's a damn good wide receiver. And I really don't understand why this fan base turns on him. Like, the dude didn't quit. We be hyping up George Pickens, but George Pickens didn't even want to block for somebody. Deontay Johnson, all he wanted was a chance to make plays. And Kenny Pickett didn't allow him to do that. So this is a blessing for Deontay Johnson. You're going to a team that now is going to have a quarterback that should give you the football. I mean, I would have loved to see what Deontay Johnson could have cooked up this year with Russell Wilson, but this is a business. I understand, but it definitely hurts with this being my favorite player getting traded away to Carolina. And it's a double-edged sword because, I mean, technically, if we want to be honest, I kind of am like a Carolina Panthers fan on the low. I'm not like a primary Carolina Panthers fan. It's not my main team. But, you know, a lot of you Panthers fans always watch the content. You always support. And you guys are like my biggest audience on YouTube. So, of course, I'm always going to have a little bit of love for not only the Carolina Panthers fan base, but the organization, the team, too. And for you to get Deontay Johnson, only having to give up Dante Jackson in a 6-round selection, man, you won this trade. I won't call it a fleecing. It really depends on how well Dante Jackson plays this year. But I didn't see any Carolina Panthers fans having anything, you know, good to say about Dante Jackson getting traded. Like, it seems like a lot of Panthers fans were happy that they were getting rid of the dude because the dude wasn't really that good. So that tells you everything that you need to know. If the fan base isn't upset that a certain player is getting traded,
That shows you that that player really might not be that good. But I'm going to give Dante Jackson the benefit of a doubt. But Carolina won this trade. The Steelers are getting a cornerback that at best is average, a late round selection, and the Carolina Panthers get a wide receiver run to help out their young quarterback. Great trade by the Carolina Panthers. I hate this trade for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know that the Steelers are probably going to find another good wide receiver. That's just what they do. They just have a knack for finding good wideouts, bro. But Deontay Johnson was one of my favorite players, man. I got a Deontay Johnson jersey sitting back home in the crib. I don't know what I'm about to do with it now, man. I can't wear it no more. What I'm going to do? I can't sell it. Who's going to buy a old Deontay Johnson jersey now that he's not playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers? This hurts, man. And I got people blowing up my phone saying, I know you heard about Deontay Johnson getting traded. Like, yeah, I heard about him getting traded. I'm talking about it right now, and I'm really upset. You can say everything you want to about him dropping passes, him quitting on the team. But really, he was frustrated because the quarterback situation sucked. Nobody wants to talk about that. I didn't see Deontay Johnson having any attitude problems when Mason Rudolph was at quarterback. So tell me, why was that? Tell me, why was that? Like, Deontay Johnson was a good player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He wasn't Antonio Brown, but he definitely could have been a damn good, better wide receiver than what he showed the last couple of years due to him getting held back by poor quarterback play. Like, this is a really good get for the Carolina Panthers. And for the Pittsburgh Steelers, only time will tell. It depends on what you do with this six-round selection that you get and if you can turn Dante Jackson into an above-average cornerback, because right now, to me, he just looks average. But this is my thoughts on the Pittsburgh Steelers trading away wide receiver Deontay Johnson to the Carolina Panthers. Once again, the Panthers get Deontay Johnson and the 7th-round pick. The Pittsburgh Steelers are getting cornerback Dante Jackson and a 6th-round selection in this year's draft. Leave your comments on who you feel won this trade down below. I'm going to be giving my grades for some of the most notable Day 2 NFL free agency signings. We're going to start off with the Washington Commanders signing Marcus Mariota to a 1-year deal worth $10 million. I give this a C. You know, Marcus Mariota isn't a good backup quarterback, but he's not a bad backup option to have. It's just that you could do a little bit better. You could have gotten Joshua Dobbs. Joshua Dobbs, to me, is a better backup QB than Marcus Mariota. And we saw how bad Marcus Mariota looked when he was starting for the Philadelphia Eagles in the preseason last year. You know, he wasn't a good backup for him. So I don't really like this signing by the Washington Commanders. They've been spending a lot of money in free agency. They definitely have made way better signings than this one, but this definitely has to be one of the worst signings that they've made up to this point, and they've been killing free agency. Like, they signed defensive end Cleveland Farrell. I give this signing a B-. Cleveland Farrell, he is a bust. He was a 4th overall pick by the Raiders a few years back, and he hasn't come anywhere close to living up to the high expectations that were placed upon him getting drafted that high. But he still is a fairly good role player. He was really good against the run for the 49ers. And he also can give you a little bit of some flavor when it comes to getting after the quarterback. This is a good depth signing. He could be a good rotational piece for Dan Quinn on that defensive line. I'm going to give it a B-. You're pretty much signing him for nothing, only a 1-year, $2.5 million contract. This is a good deal. You get a really good rotational backup piece on that D-line. You get somebody who's really good against the run. This was a way better signing than what they did when they signed Marcus Mariota. Next up, the Minnesota Vikings are receiving an A- from me for signing running back Aaron Jones. I was shocked that the Packers cut Aaron Jones after they got Josh Jacobs. We were thinking that they were going to have the best 1-2 punch in the NFL, but instead, they want Aaron Jones to take a pay cut, nearly like 40-50%. He wasn't going for it, and they said adios. And Aaron Jones is a top 10 back, and when he was healthy and he came back during their playoff run, I mean, he was damn near unstoppable. Go back and watch his tape against the 49ers, bro. He was a man amongst boys. If he can play that way in every single game for Minnesota this year, this offense is going to be way better than what you may think. Yeah, they may have Sam Darnold at quarterback, but Sam Darnold, as long as they only ask him to be a game manager with the weapons that they have around them, and you sign Aaron Jones, this is a signing that's going to make Minnesota a little bit of a sleeper team. I don't think they're going to be a crappy team this season. You know, Kevin O'Connell is a pretty good offensive-minded coach. Sam Darnold, he's a decent bridge, stopgap quarterback. Maybe you can get a good year out of him. But with everything that he has around him and adding Aaron Jones, a running back that can do it all, not only is he a factor on the ground, but he also is a pretty big factor in the passing game also. So for Minnesota, you had one of the NFL's worst rushing offenses. You bring in Aaron Jones, he should help improve that run game that gave you so many issues last year. The Tennessee Titans signed linebacker Kenneth Murray. This is one of the worst free agency signings that I've seen up to this point. I give this a D minus. I damn near gave it an F, but at least Kenneth Murray gives you a little bit of something in the run game. All right, he is pretty decent against the run, but in pass coverage, this dude looks like a deer in headlights, man. This dude can't cover nobody worth a soul. He isn't good in zone coverage. Don't ask him to stick no running backs out of the backfield or any tight ends. And he was a former first round pick a few years back coming out of Oklahoma. And there was a lot of hype about Kenneth Murray when he was coming out of the draft a few years ago. And he's been a really big disappointment. If you want to talk about some of the biggest busts in the NFL over the last decade, I definitely believe that Kenneth Murray belongs in that conversation, man, because in the 4 or 5 seasons that he spent with the Chargers, the dude, you never, ever heard this dude's name called, barely at all, when you watched any Chargers game. Now, going to Tennessee, maybe they see something that a lot of us don't see in them. Maybe they can find a way to have him playing at the level that was expected when the Chargers took him in the first round a few years ago, but I don't really see what they're getting out of this signing. And it's a massive overpay too. 2 years, $18 million for a guy that at best right now is a backup linebacker? Oh, I don't know about this one, man. This got to get a D from me. I can't give this anything more than that. The Steelers, though, you know, I am hurt that they traded away wide receiver Deontay Johnson to Carolina, but I'm not going to lie to you. I was happy as hell when I saw that notification pop up on my phone that we signed linebacker Patrick Queen from the Baltimore Ravens too, which made it even more sweeter to me. We fixed one of our biggest issues on defense, which has been poor linebacker play. Like, oh my goodness, the linebacker play for Pittsburgh has been so atrocious. Nobody can stop the run. Nobody can tackle. Nobody can cover. The only decent linebacker the Steelers have is Cole Holcomb, and he got injured last year. Outside of him, it's nobody. Patrick Queen is coming off the best season of his career. He played at a Pro Bowl level. He's better in pass coverage than anybody else the Steelers had in pass coverage at linebacker last year. And he also is really phenomenal against the run. I give this an A-. All right, this is one of the best free agency signings that the Steelers have made in recent memory. Because you got to remember, the Steelers are not a team that is known for going after big names in free agency when free agency first starts. They're normally one of those teams that likes to wait around and try to find like a good veteran that they can get for a favorable deal like they did with Patrick Peterson last year. So I was really shocked to see the Steelers sign Patrick Queen. And to give him the deal that they gave him, 3 years, $41 million, I think that may be a little bit of a good value, because I was thinking that Patrick Queen possibly could have signed the 4-year deal worth $50 or $60 million. So he got way less than what I was expecting him to get, which is a good thing for Pittsburgh because you still got more money to spend to allocate to other positions. So I'm really happy with the signing of Patrick Queen. This is probably one of the best signings that I can recall Pittsburgh making in a while. Now, the Washington Commanders, we're back on them because, man, they just making it rain in free agency with all the money they spend. And they signed offensive guard Nick Allegretti who was playing in the Super Bowl for Kansas City with a crazy injury, and he isn't a starter. He's been more of a backup, more of a rotational piece. He comes in if somebody gets injured, but he's decent. I give it a C plus. The only reason I can't give it a B is because he hasn't really been known for being a good starter. He's just known for being a quality backup. Now, I'm not saying that if he does end up starting this year for Washington, he's going to be terrible. It's just that we don't really know how good this dude truly is because we don't really have a lot of reps of him actually being a full-time starter for a whole season. So I got to give this a C+. Now, if he ends up playing at a really high level for the Commanders this season, which he most definitely can, like, I don't think he's going to be bad. I think he can be decent. But if he ends up playing at a Pro Bowl level, then next year I'll probably come back to this and call myself an idiot and change this grade from a C+ to like a B+ or A-, because the potential definitely is there. He definitely does have upside. He did play pretty well in the Super Bowl, and he does have like some pretty good film when he comes in to replace anybody that has gotten injured on the interior of Kansas, on the interior of Kansas City's offensive line the last couple of years. But I just don't really know how good this dude is as a full-time starter. So until I see that, I got to give him a C+. Still a really solid signing. Just don't really know too much about him as a starter because he's been more of a quality backup. Jameis Winston. I really wanted to see my boy get one more opportunity to compete to be a starting quarterback. And instead, he decides to become Deshaun Watson's backup in Cleveland. He's signing a pretty favorable deal, 1 year, $8.7 million. I give it a B-. You're getting one of the best backups in the NFL. Deshaun Watson, he's been injury-prone ever since you traded for him. And if he continues to stink it up, you put that boy Jameis Winston in there, and he'll have that offense humming. One thing about Jameis Winston is that, yeah, he may have his turnover issues, but he can move the ball downfield for you offensively. You're never going to have a game where you just get shut out on offense with Jameis Winston at QB. He likes to push the football downfield. We know how ultra-aggressive he is, which can be a pro and a con. Most times it ends up being his downfall. But for the Cleveland Browns to get a quality backup for $8.7 million, only 1 year, this is a B- signing. Okay, Jameis Winston is one of the better quarterback options that you can find to be your backup, and I still believe that he is a low-end starter. So maybe, you know, if Deshaun Watson gets hurt for a game or two, Jameis Winston comes in, he performs pretty well, the Browns got a really good coaching staff, a really talented roster around them. So he could come in, play good for 2-3 games. Deshaun Watson comes back healthy. He goes back to the bench and, you know, he just earned himself maybe another opportunity in 2025. So I'm eager to see how this Jameis Winston backup story in Cleveland pans out. A lot of people thought they were going to bring back Joe Flacco after how well he played, but maybe Joe Flacco is just saying, you know, last year was just a one-off thing and I'm hanging back up the cleats and I'm going to just enjoy retirement for good this time. Now, next up, we have the Bengals signing tight end Hunter Henry. I give this a B. Hunter Henry is really underrated. And not a lot of people really talked about this signing at all, but if you think about how bad New England's offense was last year, if I were to tell you that Hunter Henry was probably their best weapon in the passing game, you probably would say, man, JT, he played for the Patriots. Like, who else did they really have? And that's understandable. But for you to be a tight end and be the best option on the worst offense in the National Football League, imagine what he's going to be able to do with Joe Burrow. Now, you had Irv Smith last year. He didn't do anything. Hunter Henry, last year for New England, had 6 touchdowns. He's also a pretty decent blocker as well. He should be way better than what Irv Smith was. And if you go back to his first season in New England in 2021, when he got decent quarterback play and they still had Josh McDaniels calling the plays, the dude had 9 touchdowns and 75 targets, caught 50 of them. So this is a really good underrated signing by the Cincinnati Bengals. A lot of people aren't going to talk about this, but Hunter Henry, he was underutilized, not really due to the fact that the Patriots didn't try to get him involved, but he just didn't have good quarterback play for him to truly show how good he is. With Joe Burrow, Hunter Henry could be a Pro Bowler, potentially. So I love this signing for the Cincinnati Bengals. Really underrated. It's going to go overlooked. But if you're looking for a decent tight end to draft in fantasy football this year, I definitely would be looking to target Hunter Henry. You're probably going to be able to get him late in the draft, and it's going to be one of those picks that you're just using to fill off your bench. Hunter Henry is going to be really productive for Cincinnati this year. The Dolphins signed former Tampa Bay Buccaneers pass rusher Shaq Barrett. The downfall of Shaq Barrett has to be studied. He went from being an all-pro 1 year, having double-digit sacks, and then after that, this dude just completely fell off the cliff. Now, last year, you know, he had a death that he was dealing with his daughter, which, you know, prayers out to him. I know that definitely was a tough situation to go through. Hopefully this season, he's in a better mental state, and he can bounce back. This is a C-plus signing for me because, you know, Shaq Barrett, you don't even know if he's even going to be able to give you even six sacks. He may give you like three or four at most, but I don't really see him turning into what he was when he ended up having that big season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back in 2019, going for 19 and a half sacks. And even after that season, you know, like, he had eight sacks in 2020, 2021 he had 10 sacks, and then after that, that's when the fall off really started. I mean, this dude hasn't come close to looking anything like his 2019 form, and I think at this point, it's safe to say that his career is now starting to hit that threshold where he's starting to decline. So at this point, I don't view this more as a depth signing, good backup if you end up having another injury that you have to deal with to one of your marquee pass rushers. So I give the Shaq Barrett signing by the Miami Dolphins a C+. The Atlanta Falcons signed Darnell Mooney, and I like the signing. I just don't like what the hell they paid him. What are you doing giving Darnell Mooney a 3-year deal worth $39 million when he wasn't good for the Bears last season? You know, like, I find it funny how everybody said that Justin Fields had a bad coaching staff, but the offensive coordinator got hired like his first day being on the market by the Raiders. And then you got guys like Darnell Mooney getting overpaid by the Falcons, but people swear up and down Justin Fields had no weapons, though. Darnell Mooney is a really good deep threat. And with Kirk Cousins, he definitely is going to be a good third option in this offense behind Drake London and Kyle Pitts. But with Darnell Mooney, you wonder, can he stay healthy? And two, can he be more consistent? Because a lot of people have always been pretty high on Darnell Mooney. And it seems like every year people feel like he could have a breakout season and it never happens. Maybe he just is one of those wide receivers that's just a good number two, number three option. Because outside of his first two seasons in Chicago, the last 2 years have been really underwhelming. And for him to get this big of a deal, considering that, you know, you have durability concerns and he isn't really a number two wideout in my opinion, but he's getting number two wideout money. This is a massive overpay by the Atlanta Falcons. Like, I get that you need receivers, but if you're going to give this deal to any wideout, why not just go and try to get Calvin Ridley back or try to sign Marquise Brown? Those are better options than Darnell Mooney. And it would make your offense a hell of a lot better, especially with Kirk Cousins throwing the football. Like I said, I don't hate the signing. I just hate what they're paying him. $39 million is way too much for somebody who has been on the decline the last 2 years of his career. The Baltimore Ravens signed Derrick Henry. The rich just continue to get richer, don't they? This is the best signing that took place today. I give it an A+. Derrick Henry was already linked to the Ravens during the trade deadline. And the Tennessee Titans, I guess they weren't ready to part ways with him at that time because they just had so much respect for what he means to the organization and what he's done for that franchise that they were just willing to just let him finish off his final season in Tennessee versus just trading him at the deadline, which I think is pretty respectable. You know, if Derrick Henry didn't want to get traded, you know, let him finish out his tenure with Tennessee. You know, he is one of the greatest players of the Titans franchise history, so it makes sense. And for Baltimore, as soon as you saw this guy on the open market, you knew that he was pretty much a lock-in pick to go to Baltimore and be their next RB1. They are losing Gus Edwards. They lose J.K. Dobbins. He's a free agent also. So is Dalvin Cook. So the only running backs that they have outside of Derrick Henry is Keaton Mitchell, who's coming off a season-ending injury, and you got Justice Hill. Do you not know how scary this Ravens backfield is going to look? You got Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry lining up in the same backfield? Like, oh my goodness. Like, how are you going to try the game plan for the Ravens offense now? It's like, if you try to game plan to stop Lamar and try to keep him from getting out to the edges, they're just going to pound the rock up the middle with Derrick Henry. And then it's like, if you want to try to just go all in and stop the run, they're just going to beat you over the top, throwing the football all over the yard to Zay Flowers and Rashad Bateman and Mark Andrews. So this Ravens offense was already stacked, but now they just become super stacked with the addition of Derrick Henry. And you're signing him to a two-year deal, and I think it's a pretty favorable deal. It's not one of those contracts where you're massively overpaying, because I do believe that we're about to start to see the decline of Derrick Henry sooner rather than later. But the thing with Derrick Henry is that he's a Hall of Fame caliber player. So Hall of Fame caliber players, they regress at a way slower rate than the average player does. So yeah, Derrick Henry's getting up there in age. He's getting into those forsaken years of running backs. But he still can give you at least one or two more highly productive seasons. But I think that's all he got left. After two more years, I definitely think that he probably hangs it up, or he just becomes, you know, an RB2 and a really good, you know, running back to complement a younger RB1 in the next couple of years. But right now, he's still one of the best running backs in the game, and you boys better put some respect on King Henry. Like, look, I'm a Steelers fan, but I'm not going to lie. Even I was a little bit, you know, excited when the news came out that they signed Derrick Henry officially, because I want to see what him and Lamar Jackson, the same backfield, is going to look like and how many problems that's going to create for opposing defenses. A-plus grade for this signing. The Commanders, once again, we're talking about them. They signed Dante Fowler Jr. to a one-year deal worth $2.5 million. Another great pickup for Washington. Dante Fowler follows Dan Quinn from Dallas to Washington. He's another good rotational pass rusher. He's not a guy that's going to give you like 8-9 sacks. He's a guy that's going to come in, give you maybe 5-6 sacks a season. He's pretty decent against the run as well. So you just continue to add more depth and build up your rotation on the defensive line. People keep wondering if what the Washington Commanders are doing right now is enough to replace the production of Montez Sweat and Chase Young. A lot of people right now are saying no, but I kind of say yes. Chase Young wasn't that good at the 49ers. We know Montez Sweat is a stud. It's going to be hard to replace that. And you don't have any edge rushers on your team right now that you look at and you say, yeah, like, that's one of those dudes that you know is going to get 10 sacks a season. You know, you don't have any of those guys. The guys that you have signed in free agency that are currently on your team at this moment are guys that are going to give you 8, maybe 9 sacks most if they just have a great season. But realistically, yeah, you don't have a lot of elite pass rushing talent, but you do have a lot of depth at that position, and you do have guys that can get after it, and you may not have an elite guy, but you got a rotation of guys that you can just rotate in and out of the game that can generate a decent pass rush for you. Now, you're going to have the best pass rush in the NFL? Absolutely not. But with guys like Dante Fowler and Dorrance Armstrong, you know, Washington's pass rush, I think they'll be all right. They won't be great, but they'll be all right. We got the last move by the Washington Commanders. Jeremy Chinn, formerly was the safety the last couple of years for the Carolina Panthers. This is a B-plus signing for me. The reason why is because Jeremy Chinn is a really versatile chess piece. Not only can he play safety, but you can play him at linebacker. You can play him at slot corner. There's so many ways that you can utilize Jeremy Chinn's skill set. He is really unique. And we saw how Dan Quinn was able to use guys like Marco Parsons and number 14, the running back, I believe his name, the linebacker out of FAMU who went on draft, I believe his name was Marquise Bell. He was a safety who ended up getting converted to linebacker for Dallas, and he played pretty well this season. So if you look at what Dan Quinn did with Marquise Bell, a young safety that was undrafted out of FAMU and had him playing at a pretty high level as a converted linebacker when he really is a safety, imagine what he can do with Jeremy Chinn. When I end up releasing my most underrated free agent signings of this offseason, Jeremy Chinn is definitely going to be high up on the list because I don't think a lot of people know how good Jeremy Chinn truly is. Now, his pass coverage may not be as good as what you would like, but it still is good enough that, you know, with his versatility, he just brings so much to your team and your defense. And I just think the Commanders defense got a lot better with not only signing Jeremy Chinn, but the other signings that they've made on that side of the ball the last couple of days. Next up, we have the Houston Texans signing edge rusher Danielle Hunter. This is an A. The Texans have been in the market for our star pass rusher. Danielle Hunter, he is getting up there in age, but he's coming off a fantastic season for the Minnesota Vikings. And the Minnesota Vikings, there were rumors saying that they were looking to trade him dating back to around before the preseason started last year, but they ended up keeping him. He ended up balling out, and he's getting a massive contract. They're signing him to a two-year deal, $49 million. $48 million of that is going to be fully guaranteed, and he's going to be a good mentor to a young guy like a Will Anderson who just won Defensive Rookie of the Year. You got him on one side. You got Danielle Hunter on the opposite side. That's going to be a really good pass rushing duo. When you think about the AFC South, having guys like Trevor Lawrence, you got Will Levis. You need to be able to get after the quarterback. You got to be able to affect that pocket. And you definitely are going to be able to do that. And then some, now that you're going to have Danielle Hunter and a Will Anderson that potentially could give you 10, maybe 11 sacks in year two. I can't wait to see what the Houston Texans continue to do because they traded for Joe Mixon also. Not really going to spend too much time on that, but I like what the Texans have done. There were some Houston fans that were getting a little bit impatient. They were like, why aren't we making no moves? Like, we got money. We need to sign somebody. Well, here you go, Houston Texans fans. You got Danielle Hunter. Great pickup. Great signing. A grade for me. And lastly, we got the Philadelphia Eagles, who right before I went on live, they signed him to a three-year deal worth $33 million. This is a B-plus grade. He missed the majority of last year with the Detroit Lions due to an injury, but when he was on the field, he was making plays. He always just has a nose for the ball. Every time the play ends, he's always somewhere in the proximity or he's making a play. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is definitely going to improve what was one of the worst secondaries in the National Football last year, man. Like, Philadelphia secondary just got absolutely tore up by damn near everybody they played. Like, do y'all remember when they allowed Drew Lock to engineer a 94-yard game-winning touchdown drive? Like, unbelievable. Like, yeah, like, bring Chauncey Gardner back ASAP. Great signing by Philadelphia. I give it a B+. And these are my grades for day two of NFL free agency. Give your thoughts on these in the comment section below. Which grade is too low? Which are too high? Before we move on, if you haven't already, hit that like button. Subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We are a podcast. Every episode, including this one, you can find in audio format on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. Wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk about is this. With the Pittsburgh Steelers signing Russell Wilson, it looks like it's all but over for Kenny Pickett. All right, now what is Russell Wilson going to bring to the Pittsburgh Steelers as the starting quarterback this season, because we know how the Steelers are going to make this thing out to be a quarterback competition when honestly we know it's not. We know Russell Wilson is going to be starting this year. Kenny Pickett is not it. And they're signing Russell Wilson to a one-year deal worth $1.12 million. So when you got a guy that cheap, I mean, you really think Russell Wilson is really going to be riding the bench behind Kenny Small Hands Pickett? Yeah, I strongly doubt it. So when you think about the impact that Russell Wilson is going to have on the Steelers, first of all, we got to think about how his presence on this team is going to affect Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett, he's going to have to fight for his job. He's going to have to fight for the right to be the starter this year. And at this point, it just looks like the Steelers have given up on him. And some people think that Kenny Pickett could sit behind Russell Wilson for a year and then he could take back over the reins next year. But I don't see that being a realistic option. Kenny Pickett, by the time he starts next season, if that happens, hypothetically, he'll be like 27 years old. And when you got a quarterback that old who has to sit on the bench, it just is a lost cause. Kenny Pickett just isn't it. Now, Russell Wilson, if he ends up playing at a decent level and he gives the Steelers serviceable quarterback play, this still is a team that should win 10 games, because we know that Mike Tomlin is one of those coaches that just knows how to win with having garbage at quarterback. But if Russell Wilson can play like how he did last year for Denver, you know, in an offense that is built around play action, which is what he does best, you know, getting on the move, getting outside the pocket, making throws downfield, I think Russell Wilson may end up being able to resurrect his career. And I don't think Russell Wilson wants to go out with the Denver Broncos memories being the last thing that you remember about his career. I definitely think that he has a chip on his shoulder. He has something to prove. And you know what Mike Tomlin is all about. He's all about guys who really are hungry and who want to prove themselves. And that's what Russell Wilson is. He's a hard worker. He's a dedicated guy. I don't think he's a crappy person in the locker room. I just think he's just one of those odd people. You know, like, you know those odd people, like, they're not crazy. You know, they just have, like, certain things that they do that you find just a little bit unusual. And that's what I get from Russell Wilson. Like, anytime former Seattle Seahawks players talk about Russell Wilson, like, I was listening to Marshawn Lynch a few months ago when he was on I Am Athlete. He said how Russell Wilson just was a little bit of a different cat from everybody else. He comes from a different background. And I think that's a little bit of a reason why he kind of struggled in Denver, because he struggled to be able to relate to guys in the locker room. And he didn't get along with Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton is the complete opposite of what Russell Wilson is. Russell Wilson is this happy-go-lucky guy, always has a smile on his face, never gets too down on himself. And Sean Payton, man, this dude is a straight sharpshooter. He's going to tell you what it is. He's old school. He's going to get in your face. He's going to cuss you out. Mike Tomlin doesn't do all that. Russell Wilson makes a mistake. Mike Tomlin probably pulls him over to the sideline. He says, hey, Russ, like, pick your head up. Let's go. We'll get it back on the next drive. So Russell Wilson, he could potentially give the Steelers the best quarterback play that they've gotten since 2019 Big Ben. Or I'll probably even say 2020 Big Ben. And with this division being as tough as what it is, you need Russell Wilson to play decent. Now, him playing decent probably isn't good enough for Pittsburgh to win the AFC North. I think most Steeler fans are honest about that. You're in a division where you got Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. Both two young quarterbacks in their prime, and they're top three, top five at their position. Russell Wilson is on the later end of 30. He's declining. A lot of his game has been built off athleticism. But with Arthur Smith utilizing that play-action scheme and this being a run-heavy offense with Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris, Russell Wilson, he's going to be able to bring a different element to the Steelers' offense that they haven't had. And you know what that is? The threat of being able to actually throw the football downfield. Like, Kenny Pickett wasn't good at throwing the football downfield. Mason Rudolph had a pretty good arm. He was pretty good at throwing it downfield. But I think that Russell Wilson still does throw a really good deep ball. You got George Pickens, who was a monster, who damn near catches everything. All you got to do is throw it up to him. You get Russell Wilson outside the pocket, he can still make things happen. Now, he's not Houdini. You know, he's not going to be breaking out of 3-4 sacks like he used to in Seattle. And that's the thing that Steelers fans have to understand with this move. I think that the people who are really optimistic about this being able to work out are having the assumption that you're going to get the Russell Wilson that you saw in Seattle. I doubt that happens. Now, that doesn't mean that I think he's going to be trash. I'm just saying that I'm not expecting MVP caliber play out of a guy that's on the latter half of 30 and this regressing. He obviously isn't the same athlete that he once was. And when you're as small as what he is, you have to get outside the pocket, and athleticism has to be part of your game, because if you're asking Russell Wilson to sit inside the pocket and beat you and make reads and go through progressions, that's not his skill set. That's why Denver ended up cutting him and taking a record-setting $85 million cap hit. Now, another potential impact of Russell Wilson being on the Pittsburgh Steelers is that, you know, if this thing doesn't work out, and let's say it does hit the fan and this is the move that results in Mike Tomlin having his first ever losing season, then hopefully, I would pray the Steelers are bad enough that they're in position where they're picking top five, top three in the draft, and they could come away with Shedeur Sanders or whoever is the top quarterback in the 2025 draft class. You see, the thing with the Steelers is that they're never bad enough to be in position to get any of the top QBs in the draft, but they're never good enough to make it anywhere further than the wild card round. So if Russell Wilson just ends up imploding and this just becomes a complete disaster, I don't think it's a bad thing, because you'll have an opportunity to restart at quarterback again. Hopefully the Steelers give Mike Tomlin one more year. I would think they would give him one more year, because the dude just made the playoffs last season. So I don't think they would fire him. I think the only way Mike Tomlin wouldn't return if the Steelers had a down season this year is if he just wants to go elsewhere and try again with a new team. But I think that Mike Tomlin, his heart and his soul lies with the Pittsburgh Steelers organization. And I think that he believes that Russell Wilson can turn it around. But, you know, if this thing doesn't work, I don't think it'll be the worst thing in the world. And I know you guys remember the video that I just made about Russell Wilson and how the Steelers have gone about this quarterback situation. It feels like to me they don't really have a plan. And by bringing in Russell Wilson, you still don't really have a plan for the long term, but you have a short term plan. And I have nothing wrong with it. You know, like, I know I was really critical of this signing, but it's like, I would look like an idiot if I were to come on here and just hate on signing a quarterback for the vet minimum, $1.12 million. Like, if I can get Russell Wilson for that cheap of a price, hell yeah, sign me up. And when you are paying your starter that much money, do you not know how much money you're going to have to spend in free agency? Like, we've seen the Steelers spending money in free agency. When's the last time you ever seen the Steelers this early in free agency get one of the bigger names? Like, they signed Patrick Queen to a 3-year deal worth $41 million. That's something that if you were paying a guy like Russell Wilson $15, $20 million a season, you wouldn't have been able to pull that deal off. So Russell Wilson, I'm not optimistic that he's going to succeed. But at the same time, it's not like I'm going into this thing with high expectations at all, because my expectations for the Steelers have been pretty low for the last 3 years. And we know what this team is. We know that they're going to be a team that wants to run the football. They want to be physical. They're not going to ask Russell Wilson to do that much. All they need is for Russell Wilson to be a game manager. And I think that this is a good situation for Russell, because when he got traded to the Denver Broncos, he was expected to be the savior. He's not expected to be the savior in Pittsburgh. All they need him to do is don't lose us the game. Don't overthrow open wide receivers that are open on 4- and 5-yard drag and slants. And take care of the football. And even though Russell Wilson, you know, he got let out by the Broncos and they gave him the pink slip, the dude took care of the football. So that's a positive. We know last year that Mason Rudolph, he did a pretty good job limiting turnovers. But Kenny Pickett, the dude doesn't even take any chances down the field at all. So you can't even count the fact that he doesn't have a high turnover number, because the dude doesn't take any risk. And then Mitch Trubisky, but that dude is shit. So Russell Wilson, you give me him, on a one-year deal, $1.12 million. Like, look, I get his last two seasons in Denver looked really ugly. But when you're paying the guy only $1.12 million, man, it's just hard to be negative about it. It really is, because I'm not going to be upset if Russell Wilson takes the Steelers to the playoffs this year. And I'm definitely not going to be upset if it doesn't work out and the Steelers suck and they're picking in the top five, top 10 of next year's draft. Like, I think that this signing is a win-win for everybody. If Russell Wilson plays good, the Steelers are in the playoff. If he plays bad, then the Steelers are going to be having an opportunity to make up for their mistake of drafting Kenny Pickett in the first round a few years ago and actually draft the right quarterback in the first round this time. And hopefully they trade up for Shadur if that happens. And maybe, you know, Russell Wilson's, you know, bold proclamation that he wants to win another Super Bowl and, you know, he believes it can happen. Maybe that comes true, and maybe Russell Wilson just out of nowhere helps the Steelers capture their seventh Super Bowl. Now, I strongly doubt that happens. The chances of Russell Wilson leading the Steelers to another Super Bowl, I think, is the same chance that me and you watching this half of winning the lottery. Pretty much second to none. But I'm not against this signing. I think it's a win-win. If the dude plays good, we make it to the playoffs. Maybe we win a wild card game. Maybe we go back home and, you know, we're in the same situation that we were in last year and a year from now, you know. Or maybe Russell Wilson ends up balling out in the playoffs. We make a Cinderella run and we lose in the AFC Championship. Then maybe you give Russell Wilson a two-year extension and you draft a quarterback who could potentially become his successor. That could be another route that this signing could take. But all Russell Wilson does is give the Steelers at least one more year to figure out how they really are going to find the future at quarterback. And like I said, this is a win-win. Like, if you suck, you're going to be able to get a good QB if Russell Wilson plays terribly. But if he plays good, you're going to be a playoff team. You could win a playoff game. You're going to have a great team around them. So these are my thoughts on the impact I believe Russell Wilson is going to have on the Pittsburgh Steelers. We got to talk about Kirk Cousins now on the Atlanta Falcons. Just how good are the Falcons now that they actually have a good quarterback? Now look, there are concerns about how well Kirk Cousins is going to play coming off that Achilles injury. He also is going to be 36 years old, but Kirk Cousins is still a really accurate passer of the football, all right? And even if he does have a slight decline, the NFC South is the weakest conference in the National Football League. You got a group of not great coaches, not great quarterbacks. So if Kirk Cousins' play falls off a little bit, it still could result in the Atlanta Falcons winning the division as long as he doesn't fall off to the point where he just becomes the worst quarterback in the division. And the thing with his Achilles injury and why I'm not really too concerned about is because, you know, all the Achilles injury really does is kind of take away from his mobility and athleticism, which he didn't really have too much of that to begin with. You know, you don't really think of Kirk Cousins for being able to run around and extend plays. That's not even what the Falcons need. What the Falcons need is for a quarterback who can run the kind of offense that Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris want to run, and that is that Sean McVay offense that's predicated on the quarterback that can operate from within structure, and that's what Kirk Cousins does a really good job of. And if Kirk Cousins picks up from where he left off last year prior to suffering that Achilles injury, not only are the Falcons going to be a lock to win this division, but they're going to do it with ease, and they possibly could win a playoff game or two. Maybe you see them losing the divisional round. Hell, maybe they make it to the conference championship. That may be me being a little bit overly optimistic, but overall, Kirk Cousins makes the Atlanta Falcons a really interesting team because you don't expect them to be bad. I don't think they're going to be bad, especially when you think about all the close games that they were in last year that they only lost because Desmond Ridder just didn't know how to take care of the football. Kirk Cousins now makes the Atlanta Falcons the favorites to win the NFC South. Like, the Buccaneers are still pretty talented, but they've won that division for the last 2 years when nobody really thought they were going to be able to. I think now, with the division stepping up in talent and getting better coaching, you're going to start seeing the Buccaneers kind of come back down to earth a little bit. Doesn't mean they're going to be garbage, but with the Falcons having all this talent around Kirk Cousins, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier, you just signed Darnell Mooney in free agency. And when Raheem Morris gets that defense right, the Atlanta Falcons could be a really scary team. Like, Kirk Cousins could make the Atlanta Falcons a Super Bowl contender, potentially. A dark horse Super Bowl contender. You know, one of those teams that they make it to the playoffs and they just start ripping off wins that you don't see coming. And all of a sudden, uh-oh, Atlanta's back in the Super Bowl and we didn't even expect it. You see, Kirk Cousins last year was playing at an MVP level. 2023 was the best football Kirk Cousins ever played in his career. And now that he's going to Atlanta, who's going to have a pretty decent offensive line and a great staff and a good supporting cast, even if he does fall off a little bit, his supporting cast is just so good that it's just hard to picture him just being completely terrible and this just being an awful move. So Atlanta definitely is a team that people need to look out for. I think that a lot of people are now starting to hop on the Atlanta Falcons hype train. Hell, I wanted to take Atlanta to win the division last year, but I just couldn't force myself to trust Desmond Ridder and Arthur Smith, and I'm glad that I trusted my judgment on that one, but I don't think it mattered too much because I picked the Panthers to win the thing anyway, so that ended up being a disaster in itself. But Kirk Cousins, to me, makes the Falcons the clear front runner to win the NFC South. I don't trust Dennis Allen. I know Todd Bowles has proved he's a decent coach, but I still don't know. You got a new OC there. And you know, the Carolina Panthers, they got Bryce Young. They got a new head coach in Dave Canales. We'll see how that works out. But I really love what the Atlanta Falcons are building down there in the ATL. And You got Kirk there. He's going to have the chains. You know, this is a really good locker room guy, too. A lot of people really like the rally behind Kirk Cousins. And if you watch the quarterback Netflix docuseries, you know, it's hard not to root for Kirk Cousins. He gives it his all. He's a hard worker. He loves to spend time with his family. He's a simplistic guy. And when you got a quarterback that people can rally behind, that people can, you know, get a little bit amped up for. Like, when you listen to Kirk Cousins talk, he wouldn't really strike you as a guy that would get you amped up before the game. But Justin Jefferson and a lot of the players on the Minnesota Vikings team, they got nothing but high praise for Kirk Cousins. And they really don't understand why Kirk Cousins is viewed the way that he is as a just okay quarterback, when the last couple of years that he's played for Minnesota have been some of the best of his career. He's damn near been a top 10 QB. The Falcons could be getting the best quarterback play that they've gotten since Matt Ryan won the damn MVP the year they choked that lead to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So, Kirk Cousins, he makes the Falcons a really serious team in 2024 this year. I like them to win the NFC South. Really early bold prediction, but I think it's pretty obvious that they're going to win the thing. They got a better team right now than the Saints. The Buccaneers are kind of trying to figure some things out with their cap situation also. Just having to pay Mike Evans and Baker Mayfield. And the Panthers, man, like, they're making moves, but still got to see more. But I really love the Falcons' chances of being able to win this division with Kirk at the helm at QB this year. All right, I'm going to be ranking my top 10 wide receivers in the upcoming 2024 NFL Draft. If you haven't already seen my top 10 quarterback rankings, make sure that you guys go ahead and check that out. I'm going to have a card popping up above, so you guys can go ahead, click on that video, and come back to this one. At number 10, I got Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, a.k.a. Pretty Ricky. This dude is heavily underrated by a lot of people in the NFL draft community or the NFL scouting community, man, because a lot of draft analysts nationally, like Daniel Jeremiah and a few others, have Ricky Pearsall in their top 50, but I don't really see too many people saying a lot about Ricky Pearsall when this dude is a smooth operator. He gets in and out of his breaks fairly easily, and not just that, but he runs very good routes, and people have concerns about how he's going to hold up against press coverage at the next level. Like, I think Ricky Pearsall in the NFL is a slot receiver. Now, when you look at his size, 6'1", 189 pounds, he definitely does have the ability to play on the outside, but I really think that he's more better suited for playing in the slot because I don't think he's as physical as what you need to be to really be a good dominant outside receiver, but you can move him around on the offense. You can move him in the slot, move him outside. So as long as you are just moving him around, you know, that should be pretty good for him. He has great hands. Also, he made a crazy catch. I believe it was against LSU when he just snagged the ball with one hand out of the air. And he got hit stick too, by the way. So Ricky Pearsall is definitely one of the more underrated wide receivers in a really deep draft class. He, to me, is a day one impact kind of slot receiver. And if you're looking for somebody in your dynasty leagues who could end up having a surprising rookie season, coming out of nowhere, nobody really talks too much about him, Ricky Pearsall is definitely that guy. And I would be really surprised if he's not a day one starter this season. Keon Coleman comes in at number 9 for me. He's 6'3", 213 pounds. This dude can jump out the gym. It's like, he plays football like he's a power four. He knows just how to get good leverage on defensive backs. He knows how to box guys out. He does a really good of using his body to shoot away defenders. He's also really physical. He's a presence in the run game as well as a blocker. And he's one of those wide receivers that all you just got to do is just throw it up to him and wherever his proximity is, and he's going to go up and go get it. The big concern with Keon Coleman is that you don't know how well he's going to be able to get open and create separation in the NFL. And it could be one of those situations where every catch that Keon Coleman makes could be a circus catch because he always has to make those contested catches in 50-50 situations. But I'm not really concerned about the 40. I don't really care about the athleticism. Because what I see is a big body wide receiver that's a bully. He's a physical threat. And he's not one of those guys that's going to beat you with, you know, finesse and speed. That's not part of his game. This dude is a power, old school style wide receiver. He's big. He's going to chip in on the run game. He's going to find ways to come down with those 50-50 ball situations. He's also going to be a good red zone option for you. And he's really good after the catch, too. Like Keon Coleman in the open field with when he's able to get a full head of steam and, you know, he's running guys over, mauling guys to the ground. He kind of becomes like a running back with the ball in his hands in a sense. So I really like Keon Coleman. I was a lot higher on him before this process started than I am now, but I still believe that he can become a pretty solid receiver in the National Football League. Xavier Leggett, I have him at number 8 on my top 10 wide receivers. Xavier Leggett, when you look at this dude, he's built like a fucking bowling ball, bro. He's 6'1", 220 pounds, and he's just built. Like, if you look at this dude is chiseled. He has muscles on top of muscles, and he reminds me a lot of Deebo Samuels in a sense, just in terms of how he's built. Now, his playing style is a lot different from Deebo Samuels. Xavier Leggett is a little bit similar to Keon Coleman, but way more athletic and way faster. You know, he can go up and get those 50-50 balls. He's also a good red zone threat. But he ran a 4.39 at the NFL Combine. That is super impressive for a guy of this build to be able to move this fast and this quickly. And the way he's able to just change gears once he gets the ball after the catch is downright scary. And not only is he good after the catch, but he's a very good deep threat. He's not just one of those guys who is just a one-trick pony and he's just a 50-50 contested catch guy. He's a guy who could just flat out run and burn you downfield straight up. I think Xavier Leggett, you know, is going to be a really good pickup for whichever team ends up picking him. I expect him to be a round two pick, day two of the draft, and he's my eighth best wide receiver in this draft class. Ladd McConkey, I have him at number 7. I don't think a lot of people are talking about Ladd McConkey. I get it that, you know, he didn't really light the world on fire from a statistical standpoint at Georgia. But if you watch his film and you look out his route running, He may be arguably the best route runner in this class. I mean, this dude is smooth. The way he just moves in and out of breaks, it's like this dude is like a damn pinball machine, man. He just going here and there and here and there and here and there. And then it was really hard for cornerbacks to keep up with Lat McConkey. Now, obviously, this dude is a pure slot receiver. I don't really think that he brings much value to you as an outside receiver. Same thing with Ricky Pearsall. The physicality aspect of his game is lacking. And I don't really think he's all that great when it comes to making contested catches. And then you got the durability concerns because he has struggled to stay healthy his last few seasons at Georgia. But when he's on the field, man, you see an incredible route runner. You also see somebody that creates great separation, and he's slippery after the catch. He's one of those guys that you think you have him wrapped up, and he ends up just finding a way to slip out of it. You would think that the dude has some damn baby oil on. So Lat McConkey is my 7th-ranked wide receiver in this class. Number 6, I got Javon Baker. A lot of you guys are probably like, who the hell is Javon Baker? Well, if you're saying who is Javon Baker, do yourself a favor and go watch some Javon Baker highlights, film, whatever you got to do, because there's no way you should watch Javon Baker play and not come away amazed. This dude, to me, is going to be the biggest stud in this wide receiver class because literally nobody is talking about him. I've only seen like one or two people. It was one dude who does the little podcast on CBS with the First Pick with Rick Spielman. I really like their content. He had Javon Baker as like his 4th best wide receiver. When they posted the graphic of the rankings, there were people saying, who the hell is Javon Baker? And I was saying, bro, like, y'all people need to stop asking who and go to Google and type in some of these fools' names and watch the tape, bro. Like, Javon Baker, oh my goodness. You talk about a wide receiver that is a jack of all trades. He can catch those contested passes downfield. He has phenomenal body control. He also is able to impact the passing game, not just vertically, but in the intermediate and short areas off the field. He also has a good enough ability after the catch that he can make a few guys miss. Javon Baker started his collegiate career at Alabama, didn't really get a lot of opportunities there, goes to UCF, and this dude, he every time you watch a UCF game, he always pops off the screen. And every time I was watching UCF play, I was like, bro, like, this Javon Baker dude, I got to keep my eyes on him. And I don't know how a lot of people are talking about this guy a lot more. This dude is everything that you're looking for in the #1 wide receiver. Good size, athleticism, great after the catch, really fluid route runner. Now, he's not as good as a route runner as what Lat McConkey is, but he's a solid route runner. Listen, I damn near gave Javon Baker a first-round grade when I was watching this dude's film. Like, please do yourself a favor and watch Javon Baker so you guys can truly understand where I'm coming from. Because if you're asking who, just watch the tape. That's all I got to say with Javon Baker. This is my favorite or second favorite wide receiver in this class behind MHJ and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. I love Javon Baker, man. This dude is going to be one of the biggest steals of this draft class. At number 5, I got A.D. Mitchell. Now, A.D. Mitchell, this may be a little bit of a hot take, but I feel like his Georgia film was a lot better than his Texas film. Now, he had a really good season at Texas. You know, he lit Alabama on fire. All right, their secondary, Terrion Arnold, Kool-Aid McKinstry, whoever was sticking on A.D. Mitchell, they didn't know how to stop this dude, man. He was a man amongst boys. He ran really well at the combine. He's really shifty after the catch. You know, he's not one of those guys that's going to run over you, but he's one of those guys that he has kind of like that joystick-like ability. It's like he puts his foot in his dirt and he can make one guy miss, put his other foot in the dirt, make another guy miss. He has really good change of direction. He also is really consistent at beating press coverage. I don't really see that giving him too many issues in the NFL. And he pretty much catches everything. And he's been getting a lot of comparisons to George Pickens, and I understand why, but if you watch his Georgia film, He looked more like George Pickens when he was playing for Georgia than what he did with Texas. At Texas, he just looked like a more refined, the more calm and polished wideout. At Georgia, it just looked like he was a dog off the leash. You just threw the shit up to him and he was going to catch it. The dude just was a menace at Georgia. But he wasn't as refined, but it seemed like he was just a lot more explosive. You know, the A.D. Mitchell film from Georgia to Texas, y'all probably may not see it, but I just feel like he looked a lot more explosive at Georgia, but at Texas, he looked way more refined. But A.D. Mitchell, he, to me, is going to be a first-round pick. If I'm the Buffalo Bills and I end up moving on from Stephon Diggs, I definitely want to make sure that I put myself in position to make sure that I can walk away with A.D. Mitchell at the end of the first round. And even if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, you definitely should be having your eyes on A.D. Mitchell because he would be a great fit in Andy Reid's offense. So he's my fifth best wide receiver. At number four, I got Brian Thomas Jr. Oh my goodness. You talk about a physical specimen? Bro, this dude is 6'3", 209 pounds. And I see why Jaden Daniels had the kind of year that he did last year, because you're throwing to Malik Nabers and you're throwing to this damn demigod on the football field. And what scares me the most about Brian Thomas is that how well he moves to be this damn size. Normally, when you see a wide receiver that's 6'3", 209, you don't expect them to have a little bit of wiggle in their game, but that's what Brian Thomas has. He has a lot of wiggle. He's really sudden. He's really agile too. Good change of direction. He is an elite deep threat. I mean, with his wingspan and his length, you just throw that thing up to him, there's no way he's not going to come down with it. I don't see how this guy doesn't succeed at the next level. If Brian Thomas ends up being a bust, then I think that I might have to retire from evaluating wide receivers, bro, because he gets off the line really easily. Like, I don't see press coverage give this dude any issues at all. You know, he's really physical. He may not do a lot after the catch, but he does have enough speed. And, you know, with how big he is, he's going to be one of those guys that just is stiff-arming guys to the ground, just tossing guys to the side like they're rag dolls. I can't wait to see Brian Thomas Jr. in the NFL this season, man, because I had a lot of fun watching his film. If I had to rank my top three wide receivers who had some of the funnest, most entertaining film to watch, Brian Thomas is definitely up there. His performance against Arkansas was absolutely jaw-dropping, man, because it's like Arkansas didn't know how the hell to slow this dude down. It's like they damn near tried to put the whole secondary on him, and they still couldn't stop him, man. 6'3", 209 pounds, running 4.33. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? He damn near ran 4.29 at 6'3", 209. Like, this dude is a specimen, like an absolute specimen, man. Like, he's going in the top 15. I don't see how the Saints let Brian Thomas fall past them when you look at the big hole that they have at receiver with allowing Michael Thomas to hit free agency, getting rid of him pretty much. So if you're the New Orleans Saints and Brian Thomas Jr. is on the board when it's your turn to pick, man, I think you'll be making a huge mistake not taking him. This dude is a specimen, and he's something special. Like, you don't really see guys with this size, have this kind of athleticism that can move this well and have so much fluidity with their movement. Like, normally you just see guys that are just fast linearly with this size, but Brian Thomas Jr., he just has so much suddenness in his game that I really believe he's going to be what people thought Quentin Johnston would have been. Like, he's going to be fun to watch. Roma Dunze comes in at number three for me. And I know everybody talks about how the top three receivers are 1A, 1B, 1C. I don't see it that way. I think it's pretty cut and dry who the number one, number two, and three receivers are. It's just that the gap between the three is pretty small. But Roma Dunze, you talk about a smooth operator. You know that song that goes, smooth operator. That should be Roma Dunze's theme song, bro, because everything he does just looks so smooth, like from his route running, from how he just is able to contestantly win these contested balls with ease. It's like He doesn't look super explosive when you watch him play. I guess that's because of how lengthy he is. But I don't know. It's just when you watch this dude, he just looks so fluid. He's like a diet Mike Evans to me. You know, he's really good when it comes to keeping drives alive. If you're looking for a good, reliable third down target for a young quarterback, Roma Dunze definitely would be a good pick. You know, and I don't think you could go wrong with taking him being the first wide receiver off the board if you're like the Arizona Cardinals or the New York Giants, because there are definitely a lot of traits in his game that you definitely can see him being the best wide receiver in this class, or make the argument for him being the best receiver in this class, man. Like, he makes routine catches and jump ball situations look easy. He's going to be a good red zone threat. He's 6'3", 212 pounds, but with the way he just moves so, like, so peacefully, so gracefully, it's like he's like a damn ballerina in a sense. He has great balance. The only knock that I have on Roma Dunze and why I have him below my next top two receivers is because he's not as good after the catch as the other guys I have ahead of him. You know, I don't really think that he's that much of a yak threat. He could get a little bit of yardage for you after the catch, but I think he's more so of a big play wide receiver. You just throw it up to him downfield, and he just goes and gets it. Number two, I got Malik Nabers. I know I was talking about how Brian Thomas Jr. was a specimen, but this dude, Malik Nabers, says, hold my dang beer. This dude is a freak of nature, bruh. 6 foot, 200 pounds. He doesn't look like he's 6 foot, 200 pounds, bruh. This dude looks like he's like 6'2", 230 pounds, built like a damn running back. And I know I had a lot of fun watching Brian Thomas Jr. film, but I ain't gonna hold you. Like, I'm gonna have to take back what I said about Brian Thomas Jr. having the most entertaining film, because you watch Malik Nabers play, bro, this dude just plays like a bat out of hell. Like, this dude is just exploding off the line. You get this dude into the open field, oh my goodness. I would not want to tackle this dude if I'm a defensive back. And there were a lot of defensive backs that made a lot of business decisions when they saw Malik Nabers coming at them in the open field. And can you blame them? Like, oh my goodness, this dude is like Derrick Henry at fucking wide receiver, dog. Like, he's not as refined as Roma Dunze or even MHJ, but I mean, he's not too far off. Like, I do think that he is a really good route runner. He has really quick feet, but you just think about how much of a yak monster he's going to be at the next level. You know, my comparison to him is like, he's a mix of DJ Moore and I really think he has a lot of similarities to DJ Moore, but just way more explosive, man. It's like, you get this dude a five-yard slant, he could take it to the house because he has enough speed to outrun you. He also has enough elusiveness that he could put a couple of moves on you, or he could just run your ass over. Like, I love Malik Nabers' game, and I was so close to putting him over Marvin Harrison Jr. I really was, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It's like, I get it that these top three receivers, the separation between them is so small because they're just so great. But Marvin Harrison Jr. is just one of one. You're looking at a complete wide receiver prospect. He clocked in at like 23 miles per hour at one point during this season. He is fantastic when it comes to just making deep catches downfield. He makes the impossible catches look possible with ease. Not just that, but he also is really good if you want to get him the ball in the quick game. I mean, his go-to route that he always seems to get open on is slant routes. Like, everybody complains about Michael Thomas and how he was eating off all those slant routes when he had that big season a few years back. Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, I don't see that being any different from him in the NFL, bro. Slant routes to Marvin Harrison Jr. are pretty much the closest thing that you can find to automatic out of any wide receiver in this class that's running slants, bro. It's just Marvin Harrison, he runs a slant, he's getting open, and he's at least going to pick up 8-6 yards, bro. And then you look at his size. He's 6'3", 209 pounds, but he's not as built as what Malik Nabers is. You know, he's a little bit more, I don't want to call him scrawny, because he's not scrawny, like he is built, but if you just look at Marvin Harrison's body type compared to Malik Nabers, like, Malik Nabers is just built like a fucking specimen. It looks like the dude is in the weight room every damn day. With Marvin Harrison, he looks lean, but he doesn't look built. But he still has great size, and, you know, he's a monster after the catch, too, of just how fast he is, how good his footwork is. Now, he's not as explosive as Malik Nabers, and that definitely is really obvious. Like, when you watch Malik Nabers' film versus Marvin Harrison's film, like, Marvin Harrison is more somebody that's going to come at you, like, I don't want to say he comes at you soft, but he just comes at you smoothly. You feel me? He's going to beat you with technique. Malik Nabers is going to beat you with just outright power and athleticism. Like, you're not faster than me. You're not going to be able to keep up with me. And I dare you to try to tackle me in the open field. So the gap between Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison, I was surprised when I got done watching film on all these receiver prospects and seeing how small the gap really is between Marvin Harrison Jr. and the rest of the others, especially him and Malik Nabers, bro, because I do think that Malik Nabers' twitchiness and athleticism does make him a little bit of a rarity, because you don't see guys built like Malik Nabers every day. This dude is pretty much a damn running back at receiver, but has good route running, good footwork. I would love to see him be a little bit better against press coverage. But outside of that, man, I love Malik Nabers, and I love Marvin Harrison Jr. too. He was the best receiver in college football. You could make the argument that he was the best player in college football, man, because he was carrying Ohio State's offense. I know y'all saw the quarterback they had last year. What his name was? Honda McCord? Like, you had Honda McCord back there at quarterback, man. Like, of course you weren't going to win no damn championship with that. Marvin Harrison, you take him off last year's Ohio State team, and not only do they suffer a loss to Michigan, but they probably lose to Notre Dame also. Like, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the complete package at wide receiver. But if you have Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze over him, I understand. I can understand Malik Nabers. I can understand Roma Dunze slightly. But, you know, these are my top 10 wide receivers in the 2024 NFL Draft. Give me your feedback, your thoughts in the comment section down below. I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback for having Javon Baker at 6, but I think a lot of people are sleeping on Javon Baker, man. Do yourself a favor and go watch some Javon Baker film if you haven't already. I got to give my 2 cents on the quarterback 2 debate between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Who's the better quarterback prospect? Now, this is a really interesting conversation because at one point, Drake May looked like the clear-cut quarterback 2 in this draft class at the start of last season. But then as the season progressed, you know, Drake May continued to play well. Jaden Daniels played well. But then in the middle of the season, Drake May started playing really inconsistently. Now, he didn't have a good team. Like, every time I watch Drake May's film, this dude, his offensive line just immediately folded. Like, damn near every single time a team sent pressure or they sent the blitz, the offensive line didn't know how to pick it up. And the wide receivers weren't good neither. He only had one decent wide receiver who was in this draft class also. So when you compare the supporting cast that Jaden Daniels had compared to Drake May, it's not even a fair argument to have. Like, Drake May, he really was the sole reason why Carolina won the majority of games that they did. Plus that freshman running back that they had and Amarian Hampton. He's a beast too. But Drake May, when he has been able to operate from a clean pocket, he has demonstrated the ability to go through his reads pretty smoothly. It's just that his footwork, when he's under pressure, can get a little bit wonky. And he can just become a little bit erratic at times. When you watch the Duke and Virginia game, you definitely see that. He throws passes that he has no business throwing. It's just, I really don't know how to feel about Drake May's film, because in 2022, his film looked so much better because he was way more consistent. But this year, I think with him getting a new OC, losing Phil Longo, I think that's what kind of made his season so inconsistent, because some of the concepts and plays that they were running, bro, looked so elementary. It seemed like the only play Carolina seems to run is them streaks with curls on the outside and seams with their slot receivers running, or they're running down bubble screens or these damn slants, and that's it. Their offense only seemed to consist of like 4 or 5 plays that they consistently went to. Those damn curl with the seams in the middle, or they're doing the seams on the outside with curls in the middle. It's just their offense lacked creativity. But you can say the same thing with Jaden Danielson, the offense that he played in at LSU. Like, their offense wasn't really nothing too special anyway, like outside of just throwing go balls and curl routes to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. It's just Jaden Daniels looked so much better because he had a way much better supporting cast. But at the same time, though, Jaden Daniels is a better athlete than what Drake May is. And Drake May is no slouch of an athlete. I call this dude Baby Josh Allen because he does kind of remind me of Baby Josh Allen with the way that he plays. It's just, he's just reckless with the ball. He throws caution to the wind. I don't think he's going to slide neither in the NFL. Like, this is a hard, tough dude. You look at Jaden Daniels, though. Jaden Daniels, when he gets into the open field, you might as well just go ahead and just give up the touchdown, man. It's just a guaranteed 6 points, because you look at the shiftiness that Jaden Daniels have. It gets compared to Lamar Jackson, but I can't quite say it's Lamar-like, because Lamar Jackson just has 1% twitchiness. You're not going to find anybody else that has the kind of athleticism that Lamar Jackson has. But between him and Jaden Daniels, I do think that Jaden Daniels is just a few notches below Lamar, because Lamar is just truly a unicorn. And comparing any young quarterback prospect to Lamar is way too high of a bar to set, because Lamar is just one of one. You're not going to find a quarterback that not only is a great runner, but also is just as good as a passer as well. It's hard to find a complete package. But when you look at Jaden Daniels, though, you know, just with the fact that he has improved so much as a passer over the last couple of years at LSU, he looks way more comfortable in the pocket. He still has to get better pocket awareness, knowing when to move up and maneuver inside of the pocket. But I do think that his decision-making has gotten a lot better. He doesn't really turn the football over that much. He also is somebody that has displayed the ability to make full field reads and make progressions. I don't think that you can go wrong taking any of these guys second overall if you're the Commanders, but I would have to go with Jaden Daniels over Drake May. The reason why is because Jaden Daniels at this point, I have less question marks about him, because he takes care of the football, he makes good decisions, and he doesn't really have too many games I've watched when he's just looked erratic and he's just looked out of it. Even against Alabama, Alabama's defense was tough, and, you know, Jaden Daniels had a really good game. Now, he did throw like a really bad interception, and then he ended up getting knocked out of the game due to a absolutely gruesome hit by, I believe it was Will Anderson, who got him on the chin. But, I mean, Jaden Daniels throws a really nice deep ball. He throws the ball with really good touch. And he just, to me, is way more consistent than Drake May. And for Drake May, you know, he's one of those players that you bring him in day one, he could start for you, but he's going to have a lot of games that he's going to lose just due to recklessness and just trying to play too much hero ball. With Jaden Daniels, he plays hero ball at times, but he knows when to pick his spots. Drake May, it just seems like everything with him is just, it's either he's just going to go all or nothing, he's going to throw his body on the line, he's going to take a deep shot downfield. Versus Jaden Daniels, you know, he doesn't have that kind of risk it or no biscuit mentality. You know, he knows how to take the check down. He knows when to just be decisive with certain opportunities that he gets given to him when it comes to him, you know, trying to make tight window passes. Drake May is like, you know, sometimes his decision making is just, holy cow, bro, like, what were you thinking? But at the same time, though, when Drake May is on, he's on, and he can make every single throw that Caleb Williams can make. And that's the biggest difference between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. I like Jaden Daniels more as a prospect than Drake May, but if we're looking at who has more potential, it definitely is Drake May, because there are a lot of throws that Drake May made. Like, he threw a 40-yard fadeaway touchdown off his back foot. He didn't even step up. Like, he just faded away off one leg, threw a damn touchdown 40 yards down the field. And you see those splash plays that Drake May has. And you're just like, wow, well, damn, like, if we just get the right offensive coordinator, we put the right team around him, like, this dude could be just as good as Caleb Williams. And that's when you start to see the Caleb Williams versus Drake May discussion pop up. And I do understand why some people felt Drake May at one point was QB1, and I definitely understood it. But now I don't think that it really is an argument at this point. It's pretty clear that Caleb Williams is better than Drake May. Although Drake May can make so many of the similar throws that Caleb Williams can make, Caleb Williams is just way more refined and he's just way more controlled. And at times, Drake May just doesn't look controlled. It just looks like he's just out there playing ball. And I love watching Drake May out there playing ball. It's like watching backyard football out there. Like, the dude is just making all kinds of crazy maneuvers with his running style. It's like, he's really elusive and he's way more athletic than what I initially thought. Like, Drake May can really move, especially for his size too. But Jaden Daniels, though, I just think with him being more in control, being more consistent, less erratic as a player, I just like him more as a prospect. And that's why I have him as quarterback 2 right now over Drake May. And it is really close. And I definitely will understand anybody who disagrees and goes with Drake May. But to me, man, like, Jaden Daniels, bro, is just so fun to watch. And with how much he has improved, throwing the football with accuracy, throwing with good anticipation and touch. He still has to work on the anticipation aspect of his game because, you know, LSU's offense, I don't really think it's the most friendly to, you know, be able to assess how well a quarterback throws with anticipation and timing. But Jaden Daniels, man, he has a really nice arm. He doesn't have the arm talent that Drake May has. But outside of that, you know, if you're looking for a QB who is good enough to start for your day one, I definitely think Jaden Daniels is your guy. If I was a head coach and I had to pick between the two, I would take Jaden Daniels. But I really do think that it's a debate that can go either way. But that's just my thoughts on the quarterback 2 debate between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. And we got a special announcement. Tonight's stream was one of our most watched that we've had in a very long time, in like over 2 months. At one point, we had like 15 people in this thing. I'm glad that everybody tuned in for tonight's live stream. We went live at 7:45. It's like 9:45 right now, damn near. And we've been going on for 2 hours, so I'm about to get you guys up on out of here. Remember to hit that like button, subscribe to the channel and the podcast. We aren't just a YouTube channel. You can find the audio version of this episode and plenty more on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. All you got to do is type in the JT Sports Podcast. Give us a 5-star review if you enjoy. Follow us on Instagram at JT Sports _, on X at JT Sports _. If you have a question that you would like answered on the future episode, you can send them in the DMs on social media. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. And I will see you guys probably either Thursday night or Friday night with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.